Hi, I'm Andrew Corbett, and I'm taking you through the Bible study series, Name a Story. This is study number 4. Study number 4 is about Ahijah, the man who could never be right, and you'll see why I've addressed him in that way in a moment. In today's vernacular, Ahijah would be described as the commander of a special forces unit, or more precisely, the Secret Service. As we're going to discover, Ahijah would have had a keen sense of justice, enormous courage, been extremely loyal, been very dedicated to his assignments, and an extremely inspirational leader. By the time we're introduced to him, he's already a seasoned soldier who has a loyal platoon of soldiers dedicated to him. Now, that's an important point because we're going to make the point that his seasoning meant that he'd been years at this. He was a veteran. This would probably mean that we are meeting him when he was at least in his late 30s or early 40s, and possibly even older than that. Question 1, read 1 Chronicles chapter 12 verses 1 to 3, particularly note verse 1. So let's have a look at that. Now, these are the men who came to David at Ziklag while he could not move about freely because of Saul the son of Kish, and they were among the mighty men who helped him in war. They were bowmen and could shoot arrows and sling stones with either the right or the left hand. They were Benjaminites, Saul's kinsmen. The chief was Ahijah, then Joash, both sons of Shammah of Gibeah. Also Jezeel and Pelet, the sons of Azmaveth, Berekah, Jehu of Anathoth, and that's to the end of verse 3. All right, so which of the above descriptions of Ahijah does 1 Chronicles 12, 1 support and why? Well, I think it supports that he was a man of courage because by aligning with David, he was putting himself against King Saul and the army of Saul. Well, question 2. Ahijah had switched his loyalty from King Saul to the would-be king, David. Why do you think Ahijah would have done this, and what does it tell us about him? Well, this is a discussion point, and it's one of those things where you'd put it out there for people. And if someone gives what you feel is not the right answer, rather than crush them with, oh, I don't think so, or something similar to that kind of tone, you say, well, look, that's an interesting point. I wonder if anyone else has got something to contribute here. And by doing this, you're encouraging discussion. Even no matter how far off the answer is, it sends a message to the others in the group that it's safe. It's a safe place to discuss these things. Hopefully, the group's going to land somewhere with close to an answer that says, because King Saul had become apostate, that is, he'd walked away from God, that Ahijah probably felt he could no longer follow King Saul. Now, this suggests that Ahijah had a heart for God, just as David did. In other words, he wasn't in this because of the position. He wasn't in this because of any benefit, material benefit he was gaining. He actually would have had a heart for God. Otherwise, how do you explain him switching loyalties? Question 3. Just as we can deduce Ahijah's approximate age at the time we're introduced to him, we can also deduce David's approximate age around this time as well. Note 2 Samuel chapter 5 verse 4, which plainly says David was 30 years of age when he was crowned king of Israel. And it's supported again in 1 Kings chapter 2 verse 11. Since Ahijah came to David before David was crowned king, how old would David had been at the time Ahijah came to him? I'm not looking for an exact pinpoint of years, just an approximate, just to get the ballpark here. He would have been mid to late 20s. And the point there is the second half of this question. What does this tell us about Ahijah? So even though Ahijah was much older, he was humble enough to serve a younger man. So that tells us something about the character and the attributes, the qualities of this soldier. While the scriptures describe individuals whom God raises up to great prominence, they are few. That is, there are far more people whom God raises up who play an equally, if not more important role than these few individuals. But without the many, God's purpose could not be wrought in the few. While Ahijah only gets a one verse mention in Scripture, his supporting role for King David was indispensable. Now, it's probably about there in the discussion. I'd probably pause there and just say to others, who feels that they are called to great prominence, or who feels they are called to be a part of the many, the majority, those who support the rare few, perhaps, that God calls to great prominence? Interesting discussion point. Put it out there among the group and see how they take it up. Well, God may not call you to preeminence or great prominence, but his call on a person's life is always pivotal to his greater purpose. Rather than being frustrated about your lack of limelight, rejoice in the fact the Father's eyes are always on you. Your audience is not primarily the world, because ultimately you have an audience of one. And you notice the capital O. That's because I'm referring to God. God is our ultimate audience. Question 4. Read 1 Chronicles 12, verse 2. What skill of Ahijah is described in this verse, which would have been unusual since it's being noted in this verse? Well, the skill is that he could use his left hand just as good as he could use his right hand. Warriors from the tribe of Benjamin had become famous for their ability to use left hands in battle. Question 5. What does Judges chapter 20 verse 16 tell us about the ability of these Benjaminite warriors? Well, it says that 700 of them were so accurate in using their left hand that they could sling a stone at a hare and not miss. Now, rendering your enemies virtually useless by cutting off their right hands had become a cruel way to suppress them around the time of the judges of Israel. And, of course, King Saul is just on the outer edge of that period, so we're in a similar time frame. There's references there in Judges chapter 1, verses 6 and 7, which refers to having the enemies cut off the right thumbs of their enemies. Quite possibly, these 700 Benjaminites, who were so skilled with their left hands, Judges 20 verse 16, had been de-limbed by their enemies when their right hands had been cut off in battle or time of war. Rather than resign to a life of disability and despair, these Benjaminites seem to have worked hard to how to use their left hands as they once did with their right. It also seems that this ability was passed down the generations of Benjaminites. Thus, Ahijah seems to be a left-hander in a right-hander's world who had maintained the Benjaminite tradition of learning to master the use of both hands. Well, that is an amazing trait to do that, and it shows that the original Benjaminites who presumably worked really hard to master their left hand as they would have done with their right hand, says a lot about them as well. And that tradition of being able to use your left hand as well as your right hand being passed down through the Benjaminites. And we find Ahijah was someone who could not only do it, but he could train his men in doing it as well. Question 6, 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 3 describes the position that Ahijah held. What does this position description tell us about how Ahijah was thought of by his men? Well, it describes him as a chief or a commander among his men. This tells us that he was greatly respected. He was a greatly respected soldier who commanded the respect of his men. For a platoon of battle-hardened men to follow their commander into battle would have meant that he had earned not only their trust, but their respect as well. Ahiza was no desk jockey soldier. Years of combat would have taught Ahiza that life was something to be prized and not lightly thrown away, and this would have granted him that level of respect from his men. Question 7. How might Ahiza felt toward King Saul as he saw the way his king acted at the time Goliath had challenged any Israelite to fight him? And of course, the story of what ultimately became the story of David and Goliath is recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 17. And in particular, Saul's response we can see in verses 1 to 11. And you might recall that Saul acted in a way that was very unbecoming a king. He refused to lead his men out to war. He refused to challenge Goliath. And so perhaps, as we say on the last page of this study, page 18, perhaps it was on that day that Ahiza saw a 16-year-old shepherd walk out of the king's tent with nothing but a slingshot in his hand to face a giant that his loyalty to his king was challenged. And I've put a question mark there because I'm just conjecting, but it seems pretty likely that it was on that day that when he met David, he saw a king in the making. So we move to question 8. What might the much older Ahiza had seen in the young shepherd boy that would eventually lead him to become his chief military officer? Discuss. Well, it's an interesting discussion. What did he see in David? Now, I'm hoping that perhaps the discussion would lead to people saying, well, maybe he saw that God had anointed David to be the king. Maybe he'd seen someone who was courageous, as kings should be. Maybe he saw someone who was decisive, was prepared to take decisive action. Maybe he saw someone who was acting like the king, like a king should. There's some of the answers that I expect people will either articulate precisely or pretty close to it. David could never have fulfilled his destiny to be the king of Israel without the support of Ahiza. His support role in this vital chapter of Israel's history only granted him one verse mention in Scripture. This should remind us that in God's eyes, despite how many accolades we receive or don't receive in this life, our contribution of our gifts, talents, and abilities are often vital to God's purpose being fulfilled in this generation. And I hope, as group leader, you're able to lead your group to recognize that they, even though, as we've said in this study, may not have the limelight on them, may not have the accolades, may not be the prominent, preeminent person in their circle, in their church or ministry or whatever it is, that doesn't mean they are less. It simply means that God has a different call on their life, and the majority call is to support. Well, I hope you gained something out of this with your group. I hope your group is inspired not to necessarily be disappointed if they haven't got the limelight or accolade. And in our last study, we move to the New Testament. I'm Andrew Corbett. You can have a look at this at lacana.org or andrewcorbett.net/studies.